these things always exceed what people think. Like when Virginia added a second train to Norfolk, it doubled the ridership on the line because it was a second train per day. The Borealis up in Minnesota from Chicago to Minneapolis, that has been vastly exceeding its ridership estimates. It's often sold out. When you add trains places, people use them. It really is as simple as if you build it, they will come.
Hello, welcome to the Community Center for Marengo Urbanism, a show about bringing people together. How do they get there? Well, by train or boat or some combination of four or five terrible buses. I'm Kyler. I'll be your host today. I'm an architect and design communicator based out of Oklahoma City. And today I'm joined by a very special guest who will be helping us answer the question, how do we use public transit? Miles Taylor, welcome to the show. Could you start by telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Miles Taylor. I run the YouTube channel Miles in Transit, where I, as the tagline goes, I push transit to its limits while attempting to be entertaining. I'm also a professional transit planner in Boston.
Nice. Well, so... a little backstory, I've been trying to get a hold of you for since like 2021, I think.
Yeah.
As far back as it goes. And what's funny is recently I found myself on a train in New Jersey with Alan Fisher talking about how I was trying to get a hold of you. And had I checked my email at that moment, I would have seen an email from you saying that you were coming to Oklahoma.
Oh, so what, I've missed you anyway?
Well, no, I would have been back when you were here, but okay. I just think it's funny that email was in my inbox when I was in Philadelphia. So that was...
Luckily, I lost all that Oklahoma footage, so I'll have to come back at some point.
I should also say, luckily, the Heartland Flyer has scrounged together some money, so it will be in operation for another year. How do you feel about transit sort of ending up in this crisis mode of funding like that?
Sucks, man. I feel like every city right now is stuck in crisis mode. It sucks. It's like Philly and Portland, Oregon, I learned, is doing cuts, and Chicago, I think. There's so many, I don't even know like what's happening with each one anymore. Oregon's cutting rural transit too. It's like all of these places are having these doomsday cuts, and it always comes down like the last second, and there's this magic, you know, if the politicians somehow figure it out. But at some point, it's not going to happen. I had this really awful realization recently thinking about Philly's cuts, because that's the place that I'm most familiar with because I went to school there, is that once these cuts happen, I hate to say it, but like for the most part, life goes on and we just forget that these services ever existed, that they used to be better. People just have to deal with slower transit and less frequent transit. And like life goes on. And everyone forgets that things used to be way better. And then it's like, well, we can't add service. Like things are just constantly cutting and never coming back. And it's really sad. That's a sad note to start on.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's the note that anybody who tries to use transit starts on. Here in Oklahoma, I would say the transit system is awful. We got fixed route buses that are maybe once an hour, half an hour, if you're lucky, headway. And so that really makes the buses like almost impossible to use unless you plan your entire day around it. How do you recommend navigating like a terrible transit system that doesn't have optimal frequencies or anything like that?
I guess it's important to do research. I can give an example from Oklahoma City, and this is truly tragic. But when I went to Oklahoma City, I came in on the train on Amtrak, which stops right downtown. It's like, great. But I knew that I would have to get to the airport at some point to get home, but Oklahoma City does not actually have a bus to the airport. And so I booked myself a hotel out near the airport that's on the bus system. So I could take a bus out to the hotel, and then the hotel had a free airport shuttle that I could then use to get to the airport. So I purposely stayed in a worse area just to be able to get to the airport without having to shell out a ton of money for an Uber. And I guess, yeah, so like that type of research of like, if transit agencies publish a system map, that's really helpful to know like, okay, where am I going to need to go? And this is why I get really mad when agencies don't have a system map, because I think it's very important to be able to look at a city and be able to tell, where will I be able to use transit? Where will I be able to go? Where will I not be able to go if that ends up being an issue? And then, yeah, just especially if that map covers frequency. When going to a new city, you can look at that map and you can see, okay, this route's every 15 minutes. I can rely on that. No problem. This route half hourly, I might need to check a schedule. Or this route runs rush hour only, I can't really rely on that. So yeah, when I'm going to a new city, I will spend a lot of time looking at the system map and trying to learn how the system works. Fares are another thing. I recently did a trip up the West Coast from Mexico to Canada using only local transit, which I know is a completely insane thing to do that no normal person would ever do. But it did require doing a lot of research into the transit agencies and figuring out the fares. And one thing I did was I made a spreadsheet that had each bus route and what fare it would be and how I would have to pay it. So I could go to the bank and get the right amount of fives, the right amount of ones. So figuring out how you can pay for a trip, that's another important aspect. So just doing the research, looking at the website, I'm glad we live in an age where we can look at a transit website on the internet and at least try to figure out how a bad system works.
I'm curious how you actually got your start with your YouTube blogging journey, whatever it is. What made you decide to start documenting your experience with transit?
So when I was about 12 years old, I found this blog in Boston called The T Adventure. I mean, it was someone who was trying to review every bus route and train station in Boston. And I thought that was so cool. You know, he didn't have that many posts, but I'd read the entire output over and over again. Once I turned 13, when I could get an email and get, you know, social media and whatnot, I basically stole the concept and set out to do the same thing, to ride every bus route and visit every train station in Boston. Because for me, it was like I was going to try to ride all this stuff anyway, and I wanted some way to kind of justify it. And so I did that for a long time. I managed to successfully do every route and every station. Almost finished Massachusetts as well as a state, but didn't quite make it there. And there would be videos in there sometimes. But once COVID happened, I just kind of lost the will to write. I don't really know why, but I thought it might be fun to pivot to video because you can kind of be funnier and more entertaining, and you have a little more freedom with the stuff that you can do. So I just kind of switched to video on a whim and started uploading every week. And again, it's kind of a justification. It's like, I'm going to be doing these stupid trips anyway. I might as well have a place to upload them and like make something out of it to sort of justify them for myself. And also at this point, it pays for them too, which is incredibly nice.
Mm-hmm. So you have a series where you go to the least used Amtrak station in every state. Or I guess every state that has Amtrak. And that was one of the reasons you came to Oklahoma recently, was because you were trying to go to Purcell before the Heartland Flyer. It was supposed to end in 2 months or next month, but now it seems like it's going to continue. I'm curious, first of all, how many states have you been to so far? Also, what was your experience like in Oklahoma that will never see the light of day?
Yeah, so this was another idea that I stole. This was from Jeff Marshall in the UK, who was doing it for the various counties in the UK. But I have visited, I'm going to check. I'm editing one right now, and I put the number up every time so I can check and see if I scroll to the right spot in my editor. This is so riveting. Okay, this is my 25th, this video I'm working on right now. So 25 out of 46, so I'm more than halfway. My experience in Oklahoma was really interesting. Because it's one of these least used stations, one of very few Amtrak stations, period, that's actually run by a volunteer. So there's actually someone who comes in every day and unlocks the station. It was me and you might know Classy Whale, Caleb. He's another YouTube channel. We showed up and he basically gave us a whole history of the station. He talked to us for like 15 minutes. And it was really nice. It was a really cool experience. And he was saying that actually it's the only staffed station on the entire Heartland Flyer. Even Oklahoma City, there was like a security guard when I got there, but I don't know if there's any official Amtrak staff there. This is what the person at Purcell said. I don't know if that's the case or not, but he seemed pretty sure of himself, and he was a great resource for the history of the station. Caleb found an Airbnb kind of in the farmland east of Purcell that was in an old caboose. And that was an amazing experience. We had to use an Uber to get out there. It's kind of walkable. It's like a 2-hour walk, but in the middle of the night, it wouldn't have been great, especially because our train was late, as it often seems to be on the Heartland Flyer. But it was such a cool experience. And then the next day, Caleb went back to Dallas, or Fort Worth rather. I spent the day in Purcell, and it was actually very interesting. And this is why I like doing these least used station trips, is because I learn about these new towns that I wouldn't have into otherwise. And Purcell's whole thing is antiquing. And they have this whole main street where basically every shop is an antique shop. And I am an appreciator of antiques. I don't typically buy antiques, but I did really enjoy going to each one. And each one kind of had its own theme. Like there was one guy who was really into old cars, like old model cars. And so his antique shop was all old cars. Some of them were like flea market style, where it'd be a lot of different vendors each selling their own things. There was one, that was the original one. It was in an old hotel from like, I think 1913 or something like that. And the person running the antique shop, who was this old man, was like, I think I've seen you on YouTube before. One of the strangest, I not the typical demographic that watches my stuff. And his wife was like, oh, he watches a lot of YouTube. And I thought that was really cool. And then it turned out that his wife was on the committee that was in charge of bringing a Heartland Flyer station to Purcell when they were creating the route back in 2003, I think, 2003 or four. And so she actually gave me a folder full of really cool Amtrak memorabilia from the time, both about Purcell and also some old route guides that were incredibly cool. Amtrak had a lot of weird experiments in that time period. You had the route from like Chicago to Louisville and Chicago to, I think, Rockford. It's a fascinating read. And I don't know, it's a lot of really cool stuff. And I was really appreciative of that. So this is what always happens. You meet really nice people and you get these really cool stories. And yeah, I had a fantastic time in Purcell. One issue is that I had to walk everywhere, including I went to this great restaurant, but it was way out. I had to walk, you know, maybe an hour to get there on this pretty awful road. And so if I do go back, will I go back to that restaurant? I'm not sure, but you definitely do a lot of walking. Yeah, no, it was great. I never would have gone there otherwise. And this is a way that Amtrak boosts the economy of places. It's just some rando can show up at a small station and improve the economy, as it were, go shopping and get food and get a hotel and stuff like that.
Yeah, I love the idea of transit as a economic stimulus for like small towns or places out in the middle of nowhere. And I think that there's a lot of potential for, if we are ever able to get our act together and actually build more routes. Like I have done fantasy maps of what I wish regional rail looked like in Oklahoma and other things like that. I think it's just fun to imagine rolling up to these towns almost like as they're intended to be approached. Because when you go to like Purcell or Ardmore or places like that in Oklahoma that do have the station, when you get to the station, you're right in the downtown and it's right on the main street. It's the best way to go to those places, in my opinion.
And like, look at these towns in the Midwest, and they're usually pretty compact around the train. And you know, that restaurant I went to was sort of in the more suburban part that was built later, but the actual core of the town, it's all within walking distance of the train station. You could really easily serve an entire town with one station. These towns were built around the train, and it sucks that there is no more train in most cases.
I'm curious what your worst transit experience has been, because you're somebody who's taken a lot of transit. And this is, I've only taken a little bit of transit and I've had some pretty not great experiences. And I think one of the first videos I found of yours was like riding a Greyhound all the way across the country. I think it's your most viewed video. But how, like, what's the worst thing you've experienced in transit?
Yeah, Greyhound's pretty bad. I would say that that time I've crossed Greyhound, but I've crossed the country by Greyhound twice. And the first time I did it, we got stuck in Denver because they didn't have a driver for the next leg of the trip, and they locked us in the station overnight. They were like, you cannot leave. We're going to crack open this door so you can go out and smoke, but you can't come back in if you like wander away. They also said, yeah, also we have your stuff locked in the back and we're not allowed to get it. Like the security guard said they weren't allowed to get it. They had to wait for a Greyhound employee to show up. So it was this extremely stressful night from like midnight to 5 a.m. of hoping that the bus would be late enough that the station would open up again and we could go get our baggage. Also early enough that we wouldn't be that late and we wouldn't be stranded in Denver for longer at the Denver bus station that has since, thank God, been demolished. I don't ever want to see that thing again. It sucks that they're getting rid of bus stations, but that Denver one was just so horrible. That experience was so bad. I was actually going to give a completely different story, but when you said Greyhound, I was like, oh crap, I totally forgot about when they locked us in a stupid station all night. It was horrible. So bad.
No, yeah. Well, if you want to share the other story as well, like, we got time.
Yeah, yeah. The other one was when I tried to ride every transit agency in LA County. So for those who don't know, Los Angeles, you have LA Metro. That is, I think, an extremely good system. I think it is very underrated, just in terms of the sheer amount of stuff they have on the road. A, they're expanding a ton. They're expanding their rail network. And B, they have so many bus routes that are really long and really frequent. And the reliability is crap. But I think that's more the city's fault than Metro's fault. Like, I don't know the politics very well. Maybe it is Metro's fault. But yeah, regardless, they have a lot of buses on the road. And I think that is very admirable that they're able to provide so much service to a pretty transit hostile area. But there are also these other systems that also exist in the country, in the county, and like overlap with LA Metro. And some of them are pretty good because they're serving a sort of large city. So like Santa Monica's Big Blue Bus, it's serving the city of Santa Monica, and it's sort of these specialized routes that are frequent and good, and they interlace with LA Metro pretty well. But then you have these little cities, these tiny little cities that for some reason feel the need to run their own little crappo bus network. And so in total, there are 46 agencies in the county, and I tried to ride all of them in one weekend. And I did not know that the floor of bad transit could be this low. There was one, I mean, the most notable system on that trip, and there were many notable systems, was this one called the CART. The Cudahy Area Rapid Transit, which was nothing. It was not rapid at all.
Not rapid.
If you look at the map, it's basically just serving every little street in town. Like, it's the most deranged route you'll ever see in your life. And at the time, they've actually improved this. So I got to give them credit. I partially wonder if it's my doing that it happened. But at the time, they only had certain stops listed on the map, each of which was maybe 5-10 minutes apart from the previous stop. So it was like this line that's squiggling around with no stops listed on it. And it'll just be a random stop, and you can't figure out what the route's doing. And so I just showed up and tried to ride it, and it just never came. It didn't exist. So it wasn't rapid and it wasn't transit. It was just Cudahy Area, I guess. Then there was there was one that was every 40 minutes. This was La Campana in, I think, the city of Bell. And it's just a little loop. And it's every 40 minutes, and the bus showed up 8 minutes early. And it's like, okay, so you're just driving around in circles. Like, there's no tracker. There's no way to find out this thing exists. And I remember, and I asked him, like, have you seen the bus on the neighboring, I can't even remember what it was called, but the bus in the neighboring network I hadn't seen yet. And he was like, no, I haven't seen it. It hasn't existed today. I was like, okay. So I show up at the stop, and I'm like, I'll just wait for a bit, and like it just randomly shows up in the wrong direction. I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. Like, you were just out there. It was crazy. I've never felt more strongly that I've done an amazing achievement by at least attempting to ride them all. And some of the on the fly changes I had to make because they were so, you know, unreliable, I was pretty proud of. But yeah, that I didn't know the floor of bad transit could be that low. At least Oklahoma City, it's like, okay, well, the buses track. I can pay for my fare, not with cash. And there are other ways to buy it there. Every other system in the country now, it's like, okay, well, it's better than CART.
as long as it's not worse than that, it can't get much worse.
Yeah.
Where are some underrated transit systems in the U.S., would you say? Like, that either you have experienced or you want to experience? Or
yeah, I mean, because L.A. is an obvious one. You know, I think that the Las Vegas bus system is very good. And I have not ridden it, but this is just in my own, like, looking at the maps, like, wow, they have a lot of frequent service. Getting to the airport's a pain, but that's because the taxi companies in Las Vegas have basically, they have a monopoly on airport transit, and they refuse to let anyone else go there. And like, you know, it's obviously, it's not amazing, but it's one of the busier bus systems in the U.S. in a very transit hostile environment. Many of their stops have shelters, and I definitely want to give them a try at some point, because Vegas is the home of just kind of weird, gimmicky, like, monorails and muskmobiles and whatever else. But like, the bus system itself, the regular generic bus system, is quite interesting and good. It was private until like 2004, Like until very recently, it was private. And yeah, so I'd be interested in exploring that system more. And then, I'm trying to think of places that I've really studied. Like Portland, I think, is a great bus system, but people kind of know that, you know. You know which system's doing really good work? And this is a pretty small one, is the MEVA system in Massachusetts. It's north of Boston, and they have been increasing service a ton over the past couple years. So they basically serve these old industrial towns, some of which are some of the most low income in the state. They run 7 day a week service, and they've been steadily increasing service. So a couple of their routes are every 20 minutes now, which I think for a pretty, you know, suburban / rural at some points area is pretty impressive. And they serve a lot of places. They have a big region. They connect to other systems. They recently moved their hub in the city called Lawrence, their sort of mainstay. They moved it to the commuter rail station to better connect to trains into Boston. And it's like many in Massachusetts, it's a fare free system, which I have mixed feelings about, but I do think that on smaller systems, it makes a lot of sense because oftentimes the amount of money that you're bringing in is not as much as how much it costs to actually institute the fares. And that's a much murkier line in big cities where you are making a lot of money from fares. But on smaller systems, I honestly think that at a certain point, you might as well just go fare free because you're just not making that much money from fares. So yeah, and MEVA keeps improving. Like every time they do a service change, it's like, it's usually something cool. They're talking about doing a ferry route on the main river that runs through the region. So I'm very excited to see that. Yeah, there's cool stuff to find in a lot of transit agencies in the country. Like it's always a pleasant surprise to come across a system and be like, oh, that's very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what would you say are some of the secret ingredients that make transit good? And how do we get more of those things in our transit system?
That's a good question. One thing I love to see in small networks, and this goes for any network that's pretty infrequent too, I am a huge fan of pulse scheduling, where you have one or more, you can do it other places too, hubs where you have all the buses come in at the same time and they all depart at the same time, so that people can really easily make transfers between them. And then go to whichever place they want to go. The bus system in Vero Beach, Florida, I can't remember what the county is. I had mixed feelings about the system itself, but I thought the planning of it was really cool because they had several different hubs around the county, and their buses would often go between two hubs, taking different routes. And so you'd have these pulse points everywhere, and it was really easy to make transfers. And again, I don't know if you can call it a good system, but I thought that planning was really impressive, and it just shows like the bones are really there to do some cool stuff. Akron, Ohio has a massive pulse. It's like 20 bus routes that all pulse out of the same spot. So like, I think that's a way to make infrequent transit actually usable and show that, you know, you do actually care about about the scheduling. And then there's obvious stuff too. Like I think that frequency is really important. And one city I really want to check out, I think this is really interesting. The city of Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island. It's a very, very small city, maybe 50,000 people. You have to fact check me on that, but it's a small city. And what they did was they realized they had this great urban corridor between the university and the mall. And they said, let's put a ton of stuff on this. So their route one is every 15 minutes all the time. And they did that. They created this great trunk. And then their other routes are, you know, auxiliary routes that are generally less frequent, that all kind of feed into the one. And from what I've heard, there's a great blog post about this by, it's on the Fox in the City blog, by Blair. I can't remember her last name. But apparently the one is like very busy and gets fantastic ridership. And I think that's such an interesting approach because a lot of US agencies will really try to focus on covering as many areas as possible. But I would be interested to see how that approach would fare in a US city where you really invest in one corridor. And you talked about this in a video where like Omaha was sort of doing that with one of their BRT routes. I think it was Omaha, or was it, am I thinking of Tulsa maybe?
I made a video about Tulsa and OKC's BRT routes. So that might be what you're thinking of.
Or maybe
somebody else made a video about Omaha.
possibly. But maybe does Tulsa have like one BRT route that they invested a ton into?
That's what's kind of happened both in Tulsa and OKC. So I think Tulsa's route is actually technically worse, but they did it first. And OKC's route is technically almost BRT basic, but Unfortunately, it doesn't have like the arrangement on the street that it needs to have to be that, but it does have like the frequency. It gets enough points on the scale. It's really, I just think of it as like a functional bus.
Yeah.
But it's great to have one of those.
Which I think US cities will always like oversell BRT. Mm-hmm. You know, but if the branding and whatever is what it takes to get like a frequent route in there, like, you know, so be it. But yeah, I think that if you can kind of pool enough resources to have it like one or two routes, just a core network of something that's every 15 minutes or better, is like, I think that's game changing.
Yeah, I think I've noticed in OKC the BRT route only opened at year or two ago, I would say, and already they're pushing transit-oriented development along this bus route, which that's what makes it actually, you know, get the ridership. And that's what makes people consider, like, if they live a 5-minute walk from the bus stop and the bus goes downtown every 15 minutes, they might hop on that bus just to try it out, versus a bus where you don't see the stop, it's just a sign, it's a once an hour bus. Most people are probably not going to go to that stop and stand there and see what happens, you know.
That's another interesting thing is I was in Portland recently and rode the FX2 bus, which is a fairly new bus rapid transit route that they created. It has some bus infrastructure in the city using existing bus infrastructure that they created to get over the river. It's very cool. Once you get out onto the Division Street, which is the main street it runs on, there are no bus lanes. The bus stops are like, if anything, a little crappy because there are these bike lanes that get in the way. Like they didn't really do it correctly, where the bike lanes are really supposed to be kind of behind the bus stop, but they put the bike lane in front of the bus stop, which is really unsafe. But all that being said, the development around the route is amazing. There are a ton of new buildings along there, and like you said, if more people are living on this high quality route, then more people are going to use the high quality route. I'm a big believer that if there's a place that offers a lot of transportation value, then more people should live there. And I have to say, visiting Vancouver just completely shifted my Overton window on this, because if you go to SkyTrain stations in Vancouver, there are like 40-story apartment towers everywhere. And it's like, yes, this is so cool. We can just build as high as we want and it won't matter. So like I came back down via Seattle and riding the new light rail, I was like, oh, they're building like 5-story apartments. That's a cool, I guess.
With a big parking.
It's so good, but
next to, yeah, it.
Right.
I will say I made another video kind of in defense of the OKC streetcar. I've realized more and more, obviously the modern streetcar craze is kind of a gimmick in a lot of ways, but what it has been doing here in Oklahoma City is it's been incentivizing more of that development along its route, even if the people who live in those places never end up getting on the streetcar. The developers are able to justify it because, well, you know, this spot over here, which was previously nowhere land, is now, you know, an inconvenient 30-minute streetcar ride from Bricktown. I'm curious, I think on that video you actually left a comment about the battery electric portion with the catenary that drops down.
Every streetcar needs one.
since that comment, I got a little clarity on why that is, and it's because it goes under the rail route, which has been there for like hundreds of years, and that bridge is not low enough to get the streetcar cables under it, so it has to at least be able to drop down for that. And then they're like, well, it can just keep going for a little while before it gets back to the cables.
I mean, you know, that's fair. Like I rode the OKC streetcar system when I was there, and I thought it was weird. how the main route, I don't know if this is true or not in real life, but the way that it's scheduled for, if I remember correctly, it was a 10-minute gap, then a 16-minute gap, then a 14-minute gap. And it was just that repeating all day. And it seems to kind of actually like fit that in real life. And I was like, why is it like this?
That sounds right. I've ridden it a few times. Honestly, I used to ride my bike around town a lot more. And if I got tired while I was downtown, I would just like get on the streetcar, you can hang your bike up and just chill for a little while. Yeah, no, it's got a weird schedule and I don't understand it.
And then there's like, I was riding on a day where that other line was running and they don't really coordinate. And like the other line is shorter and I very rarely was in it with more than one other person. It was not busy. The main one, yes, but the little one, I don't know.
Yeah, the Bricktown Loop is the small one. It only runs on weekends, I think.
Right.
And I guess it's just to circulate people around Bricktown or to get people, if there's a Thunder game going on, to get people, I don't know, to a bar afterwards or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a weird system. But I will say that that has been a big part of revitalizing Midtown and Automobile Alley and all these other neighborhoods that kind of fall along it, even if people aren't actually using it, which I think is kind of interesting.
Right. Like I went to this trendy like waffle place up in, I think it must have been, it was near the top of the main street, Carl. I don't remember what neighborhood it was, but it was line out the door. Okay. Yeah. Line out the door. It was good. But and the neighborhood was great. It was these you know, fairly nice, four or five story apartment buildings. The streetcars, the Obama era streetcars, I think were kind of meant as development tools and were useful as development tools. But as someone who's interested in transit, I still complain about them.
That's fair. I'm curious. So what do you think just an average person should do if they're interested in trying to make transit better?
Oh, that's a good question because like I'm not a good advocate. I make my videos and I'm lucky that people watch them and kind of get things out of it. Because I'll just, you know, what I do is I just show what it's like to ride a system and people kind of realize that things can improve. And I'm very grateful that that's the way that I can contribute to the advocacy scene because I don't know a ton. But a lot of cities do have transit rider advocacy groups or unions or whatever else. I've done some work with Fifth Square in Philly, which is the one for SEPTA. Boston has Transit Matters. Vancouver has one called Movement that does a lot of really cool work. So I think that that's a good, like, to find that community. Because oftentimes, too, they're having fun as well. Like, Movement in Vancouver does all sorts of events and rides and whatnot. Transit Matters did this thing called the Pokey Schleppy Awards, where they had a big party and celebrated the slowest bus routes on the T. So it was like, you know, it was pointing out this big flaw with the system, but also it was like a fun thing that they did. And so, yeah, I think that finding that community, because also I think it's good to, you know, if you're interested in making transit better, hanging out with other people who also want to make transit better is not a bad thing. And I think that's a good place to go to find that type of that type of community. So it's a boring answer, but I think that you can find an advocacy group in your city if there isn't one. I think there are other people who want to make transit better. And I think that you have the power to create one. I think it's possible because every city has people who want to make the transit better.
That's true. Yeah, I've noticed that here in Oklahoma, there's not really like a transit advocacy group, but I think the Iringo Urbanism Discord server has kind of become the collecting place for a lot of those people who are just kind of in the community and want to do something. So hopefully someday soon we can actually formalize some kind of an organization there.
Yeah. And that's a great place. Like Discord, just hanging out with people and talking and getting the ball rolling like that. That's so cool.
Yeah. I'm curious about your thoughts on the community aspect of your channel and everything you've done so far, because it seems like you've got a pretty tight-knit group and then you've got like a lot of different people who come in and out of your videos and then you've got a lot of fans. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how to build community. And I know you may have done this partially by accident, but I'm curious to hear some of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I'm lucky that my channel has sort of organically grown and I see the same commenters in every video. I think that's so cool that there are all these consistent people who show up. But I feel like as far as my friends go, it's also been pretty organic. Like people like my friend Nathan, my friend Jordan, like we knew each other in high school. And then Alina and Jackson, Alina, my girlfriend, Jackson, my close friend, like we met at school in Philly. Jeremy, I knew him from Twitter and wanted to reach out to him anyway because I wanted to do a review of New Brunswick, where he went to school, which is the least used Amtrak station in New Jersey. And I like, ran into him by chance in Philly. And I was like, oh, I want to do a video with you. So like, I think that, you know, being in the transit space online, it's very, like you said, it's very tight knit, and you just kind of meet people naturally. And I feel like I've gotten to know a lot of people through just finding them online. And like, that's how we eventually got to this point where we're actually talking to each other, and someday we'll actually hang out in real life. But it's a great community. I know, right? Yeah, it's a great community. I've had people reach out to me who become close friends since then. I think it's just a place where a lot of people want to connect and make friends. And I think that once you enter the space, I think it's pretty easy to find people.
I think this is an interesting one that I do want to ask you before we finish up here. You had mentioned to me initially on our very first like email exchange, the Cherokee bus system, which is in the Cherokee Reservation of Northeastern Oklahoma. And this was something that growing up in Tulsa, I did not even know about. And it's a really intriguing regional bus system. And we don't really have anything like that anywhere else in the state, or, you know, in the surrounding states even. I'm curious, first of all, like how you found out about that. And then second of all, if you'd ever be interested in coming to Northeast Oklahoma, which is very far from any trains. in order to ride that system.
That would be interesting. Like I don't know how I found the Cherokee one, but I know that the first Native American transit that I found was the Navajo system, which is very similar. It's very regional. It serves like a huge, huge area. And I can't remember why I was looking at it, but I was really impressed with how many places you can go on it. Even if it's infrequent, it's I'm sure a lifeline of those communities. I would possibly be interested in doing a video. I think I would be a little worried about entering a space that's not necessarily for me as a non-native person, but of course it would be really fun to ride it. So maybe with an approach that's different from how I usually do things, it could be very fun to just experience one of those systems, because they're very impressive and I wouldn't be surprised if they're super well used.
Yeah, I will say, based on the information I could find, they are technically open to anyone, but again, like you said, there's an approach to it where you want to make sure that everything is good,
right?
But yeah, no, that's interesting. That was something that has been in my mind since you mentioned it.
Or wow,
I need to dig in even more on that at some point to try to figure out what's going on out there.
I think your approach to video making would work really well for it. I think of an amazing video essay about it would be really cool.
The problem is it'll take me 3 years to make it, so but I'll figure it out eventually. I guess, do you have any questions for me that you've come up with along the way or anything like that?
What I find really interesting about your output is that you come at everything from the perspective of someone who is in a state that is not known for good transit. I think it's actually the reddest state politically, or at least one of. So I don't know that there's much of an appetite state level to improve transit, besides maybe Amtrak. I think the Highland Flyer is pretty popular with Oklahoma politicians. But I guess I'm curious, like, what is it like in this very transit hostile environment? Do you feel hopeful? Like, do you feel like change can happen? Like, how do you feel? You've done some great interviews with transit workers. Like, I'm curious how your overall feelings are on what the future of Oklahoma transit looks like.
Weirdly, yes, but only at a local level on a long time scale is kind of where I'm at. I work in architecture. I kind of understand that these projects take a really long time, but I've also been keeping up with all of the different transit projects that are currently in the works, specifically in Oklahoma City. And I will say there's two more BRT routes, like the one that they have implemented, that are coming next, basically. And there's the Regional Transportation Authority that is doing two more BRT routes, which are supposed to be actual center running dedicated right-of-way type BRTs. And then the RTA is also doing a light rail to the airport eventually.
Whoa.
And a commuter rail from Edmond, OKC, and to Norman.
Can they just run a bus to the airport first? Just get something.
You would think OKC is supposed to host some of the Olympic events in 2028 when it's in LA. So that'll be interesting to see how that works. None of that transit stuff I talked about just now will be done by then. But it's been interesting following along with all of these different things to see how that process works at the very early stages, because it's a lot of political magic that I, you know, otherwise would not have understood. You know, I go to the RTA meetings as often as I can, and they're led by like the former governor who is like, you know, the last blue governor of Oklahoma, and he's still there. He's running transit for the future of OKC's. When it comes to like Tulsa, I am a little more skeptical because the second BRT line was supposed to have been open for a couple of years now, and I don't know where it's at. I've talked to the transit people in Tulsa more than I've talked to the OKC transit people almost, but it sounds like they're really infatuated with micro transit, which is a whole other podcast.
Oh God.
And that's,
I hate it.
Yeah. That's another video topic for me eventually. It's challenging, I will say, because in my mind, you know, running a train from OKC to Tulsa is a no-brainer, and we should be working on that. And nobody's working on that. And the fact that nobody's working on that is a little bit upsetting. But I'm over here trying to figure out what's the approach for pushing that to happen. Is there a way to go outside of the typical system to force that to happen? Maybe.
It's funny because lawmakers were really pushing to keep the Heartland Flyer because it serves a lot of rural areas. You'd get a ton of stuff in between OKC and Tulsa.
Yeah, for sure. Plus, like, my family lives in Tulsa. I live in OKC currently. Anytime I go back and forth, I would be on that train.
Right.
I saw a really confusing article from the Turnpike Authority where they were talking about how they need to expand the turnpike because there's so many cars, but also there's not enough demand for a train because there's so many cars. Look at all the cars.
Oh.
And my thought was, if there's that many cars, then clearly there's demand for a train. But they were doing some kind of mental gymnastics to say, man, we don't need a train.
And these things always exceed what people think. Like when Virginia added a second train to Norfolk, it doubled the ridership on the line because it was a second train per day. The Borealis up in Minnesota from Chicago to Minneapolis, that has been vastly exceeding its ridership estimates. It's often sold out. When you add trains places, people use them. It really is as simple as if you build it, they will come. It's been proven time and time again. I'm very excited for the Mardi Gras opening up later this month down in places like Mississippi and Alabama. It's like places you wouldn't expect to have great trains, but I think it's going to be really popular. I think the first day is already basically sold out.
Well, even the Heartland Flyer, I used to ride that train 3 times a week to class in Norman, and it was full more times than I expected it to be. And they actually, while I was riding it during that semester, they added a third car to it because it was only 2 cars previously. Even a once a day train, people are using it. It's yeah. Anyways, thank you for joining me. Where would you direct people to find your stuff?
Just go to Miles in Transit on YouTube. And I have like a best of playlist if you want to do that instead of whatever crappy recent video I've done. But I hope that you'll find stuff to enjoy anywhere on there. I would appreciate if you checked it out.
Sweet. Yeah. Thank you for joining me. I hope you had a good time. And yeah, we'll talk again some other time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. And we are going to meet in person at some point and ride some stuff.
One of these days.
Yeah.
Hey, it's me, Kyler. If you enjoyed this conversation, please be sure to give the show a like, rating, subscription, or whatever kind of nice feedback you can provide on whatever platform you're watching or listening from. If you'd like to join our community to stay up to date or to discuss anything you heard in today's show, consider joining the Aringo Urbanism Discord server. And finally, if you'd like to support the work of Aringo Urbanism directly, you can do so over on Patreon. Until next time.